Okay, so tonight we have a cool speaker for you. She's a friend of mine, and she's got 8 years of sobriety. And I think I saw her pretty close to when I first got here several years ago. And she's always got something very sincere to say, and I know that my higher power has spoken through her many times. And so everybody, please give a warm Valley Group welcome to Joyce.
Good evening. My name is Joyce, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow, I love that moment of the day when I can walk into a meeting and say I'm an alcoholic and know that I'm home and I'm safe and it's okay to be me. I want to welcome all of the newcomers here. Congratulations to the chip takers. What an awesome experience to celebrate that with you. I remember those days. And, you know, today I recognize that none of us in this room are any different. We all only have today. So we're glad you're here with us. I also want to thank Bill for inviting me to come to speak. Bill has such an interesting way of asking people to come to speak. He'll say, I was wondering if you might be available and if you would be interested in coming to speak. And my first thought was, well, I'm available, but I'm not really interested. Then I thought, well, you know what? I am interested in staying sober, and I know that I can only stay sober if I carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'm very grateful to be here with you tonight. I always like to start when I speak for a group with how it is today. This morning when I woke up like I have every other day for the last 8 years and 4 months in the grips of a deadly disease called alcoholism. I have a reprieve on a daily basis by a conscious contact with a power greater than myself, but I can't have that when I'm sleeping. So when I wake up, I spend a few moments thinking about what it was like 8.5 years ago. The sorrow, the grief, the despair. Once again, alcohol won, and I ended up drinking. Every day, I would swear that I was not going to drink, and by that night, I was drunk again. Waking up in the morning, totally in fear, not knowing what I had said to my family, waiting for them to wake up to see how they would receive me and if I had done something once again that would make them incredibly hurt and angry. That's enough to get me out of bed, get on my knees, ask for a power greater than myself to guide me. I read my daily reflections. I have a couple other readings that I read every morning first thing. Then I stand in front of the mirror. I found this saying recently that I really, really like. It says, am I strong enough? Am I willing to commit my life and my heart at an even deeper level to doing whatever it takes to keep moving forward? Take a deep breath. Take that challenge. Know that if I am bold enough to ask for God to show me what to do, then I have to have faith that He's going to be there and show me exactly what to do. And I also am becoming very, very grateful that humble pie has no calories because I usually end up eating a lot of it every single day. But that's okay because I'm learning that every time I do that, I move to a deeper level of surrender and my life gets bigger and I gain more freedom. I went to work today. I actually have a job. I show up on time. I do the very best I can. Some days I'm not as focused as others, but I make it through it. I actually have 4 other jobs, too, and I get to interact with them. And it's an incredible experience. I got to go home before I came here because I pay my rent on time and I have a place to call home. I got to relax and spend a little bit of time with my higher power before I came tonight, hopeful that I could carry a message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I got to come here and spend time with all of you. I can't think of a better way to spend my day today. That's not what it was like for me 8.5 years ago. 8.5 years ago, I had finally controlled my drinking enough that I was down to 1 bottle of Jack Daniels, sleeping pills to go to sleep at night, and I could make it to work on time. On the weekends, because I'm a numbers person, I would do the math, and it would be a lot more effective if I would buy the big bottle of Jack Daniels, because I could average that out over the weekend. It would be more cost effective. The only problem was, by the time that Friday evening rolled around, usually 99% of that bottle was gone. There was just a little bit left in the bottom, and I seemed to know that if I drank that last bit, I might get into alcohol poisoning, so it would end up down the drain, which was very discouraging the next morning when I woke up and wanted more alcohol. My Saturday mornings, I got up very early because I had to go grocery shopping and beat the crowd. And I would stop at the liquor store on the way because there was very few people out at 6:30 in the morning, but our grocery store opened at that time, so I would stop at the liquor store across the street, drink some alcohol while I was shopping. And then I would drive. At that time, I lived in Tulare. We were over on the west side of town, which was a little dicey. So I would drive over to the east side of the town. I would dump that, or I put that bottle of Jack Daniels, the half of it that was left after my grocery shopping, I'd put it in the trash can because I wasn't going to drink anymore that weekend. Inevitably, before the end of that day, I was back on the other side of town digging that out of the trash. Thank God it was always there because that was the nicer side of town. Never realizing that I had stooped to the level of becoming a dumpster diver. And then I would go through Sunday on a similar basis, most of the time passed out, to get back to work. And that was my life. My kids, when they came home, they never knew what they were going to get, most likely angry. I always told them what they needed to do. I could give really good advice. I never followed it. I was mean. I was nasty. I was controlling. And I was hateful. But I didn't recognize any of that at all. I started about 6 months prior to my the end of my drinking, going online and taking that test about you might be an alcoholic if, you know, and there's 20 questions. And I could answer 18 of them yes, and the other two I answered no, but I lied about, you know. And then I would get to the end, and they said if you answer yes to more than three of these, you might be an alcoholic. I figured it was rigged. You guys just wanted people to come here. I would get really depressed at night. I would call the 800 number of Alcoholics Anonymous. They would ask me if I needed help, and I would hang up and I would hide. I guess I thought they were 911 and they knew where I was calling from, and they would come find me. It was just ridiculous. I was living with a guy at the time because, you know, there's always a him. There's always got to be a him or a her, depending what your preference is. Mine was a him. Very toxic relationship. I didn't understand at that time that it wasn't that I was in toxic relationships. I brought the toxic to every relationship. I was very, very grateful that there were a lot of people that wanted to participate with me, and we made a really good team. This guy had told me that he was going to start seeing this other girl, and I should move out because I would feel a lot more comfortable. I told him I wasn't moving out because he owed me. I had sold all my stuff to move in with him. I didn't have any money to buy other stuff, so I was going to live there. So we had spent the next year and a half, him seeing this girl, hiding it from me, me trying to prove he was having an affair, and that was my normal. And I finally got to a point where I'm like, this might not be normal, and maybe my drinking's having a problem with this. So I decided to stop drinking beer at that point, because that was my problem. And so it took about 2 or 3 days until I figured out that I could drink Jack Daniels, put it in my Diet Pepsi, and nobody knew. And that was really cool. It didn't take too long until it became less Diet Pepsi and more Jack Daniels, and then finally just all Jack Daniels and no Diet Pepsi anymore. I'll tell you what, I spent a lot of time in the laundry room. That's where I hide my alcohol, and we never had clean clothes. Nobody ever questioned that, but it worked for me. I got to the point where I was just tired. I was so tired of waking up and that depression and aloneness and fear. And I decided that I was an alcoholic, that I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been reading online about meetings, and I needed to go to Bridge Street Drunks because I was a drunk. And it was very, very convenient because they had a noon meeting. It wasn't very far from my office, and it was very busy and very important. I'm sure you can all recognize that just by looking at me. So I had to make this work into my time frame. so noon rolls around that day, and I drive over to that meeting. It's over on the north side of town. My dad was a cop when I was growing up. We weren't supposed to be on the north side of town. I was sure my dad was going to be totally mad at me. I'm 47 years old. My dad lives in another state, but that's where my mentality was. I drive up at that meeting, and there's a bunch of little old men sitting around the table smoking cigarettes. And I'm like, I can't go in there. I don't know much about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I know you have to relate to people, and there's no way that I can relate to these people, so I better go to a different meeting. So I went over to the Alano Club, and much to my dismay, there was a guy walking in with baggy pants and tattoos and the hanging chains, and I'm like, oh, holy cow, I can't go in there either, because I used to be a police dispatcher, and we might have arrested him, which is totally stupid, because nobody saw me. They only heard me. And besides that, I hadn't been there in 10 years. And this kid was probably only like 25 years old. He would have been 15. He wouldn't have been coming into the PD anyway. But anyway, so I was like, well, shoot. So that night, I looked on the meeting list again, and there was a meeting at the Trinity Church, a women's meeting that night. So I was like, I can go there. I grew up in Christian Reformed Church. That's a spin-off of Christian Reformed Church, so I'll be safe. So I go to that meeting at 7 o'clock, and I'll tell you what, I don't know what I expected, but it certainly wasn't what I saw. There was about 30 women sitting in a circle, and they were all happy and laughing. And, you know, I stood up and said, I'm an alcoholic, and they gave me a 24-hour chip, and I was so excited. And I guess I was looking for some magical answer, some pills, some holy water, or something that would make me not an alcoholic, and that didn't happen. They just went around the room and talked, and I really didn't get it at all. And a lady that had over 20 years of sobriety, she bought me a big book that night, and she gave it to me. And I still have a little bit of a resentment about her 8 years later because she didn't tell me to read it. It's very important when you buy a newcomer, especially one that's still drinking, a book, you have to tell them to read it. We all need very, very descriptive instructions. So I went home that night, and I was thinking about this meeting. I'm like, oh, you know what? This stuff kind of works, because they said progress, not perfection. I made it all the way home without getting drunk. This worked. I didn't drink until I got all the way home. So I went back the next week, and, you know, I drank in between, and I went back to the meeting, and there was more talking, and, you know, it still didn't get no magical epiphany or anything, but I was like, well, I don't know, they seem to be sober, and I keep getting drunk, so I guess I'll keep coming back again. And so I went through the next week, and I go back to the next meeting, and by then, the miracle had happened. I had 3 days of sobriety. And I was getting this licked, let me tell you. And I went to the meeting, and they did a little more talking. And at the first meeting, they had given me a phone list of people to call. And about the fourth day, I was starting to get a little shaky. And it's like, you know, that's the problem. I don't call any people, so I probably need to call somebody. Now, of course, I didn't call the lady that had 20 years of sobriety that bought me the big book. I called the one that had 9 months of sobriety that said she was struggling in the meeting. Because, of course, after all, I could help her. I had 4 days of sobriety, you know. So I call her up, and, you know, I'm like, oh, my God, sobriety is so great. And I've been sober like 4 days, and I just don't understand why you're having such a hard time. And she says, you're just on a pink cloud. You're going to fall off of that. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. So I went ahead and drank. So that didn't work out so well for me. So then in my best reasoning, my biggest problem was that I wanted to drink the most by weekends, and I was going to a Tuesday meeting. So if I went to a meeting on a Friday, then I could definitely make it through the weekend. So I go into the Alano Club. This is now 4 weeks later. I have my purse. I drive up in my cool car, because I did have a cool car then, you know, and from my job, mind you, and go in with my purse. And I sit down, and I'm clutching my purse, kind of looking around. And the meeting starts, and the basket goes around. Now, what I'm certain the gentleman said today was, you know, the baskets went around and we don't have enough money to cover our rent, so we're going to send it around again. And maybe if you could put a little extra in the basket for the people who can't, that would be much appreciated. That's what I'm certain he said. What I heard that day was, you have a job and you obviously have money, so why don't you support this whole meeting? And I got very, very pissed, and I got up and I flounced out of the meeting, and I went on the worst bender I had ever been on. I kind of surfaced a little bit on Saturday. My family was pretty concerned about me. Sunday, I white-knuckled it, made it with my son out of town, but he had to police me and go into every store with me, so I didn't accidentally buy alcohol in there. Come Monday, I was able to go back to work. And I was following a really strict program by then to control my alcoholism. I didn't want to be caught drunk driving, so I would go buy my alcohol before work. I would go back home. You have to drink a little bit, mind you, before you put it in the freezer. But you have to put it in the freezer so it's really cool. But you don't want it to expand and break. So you have to drink a little bit. So I would do that. And then I would go to work. And then I would make it home without drinking. Well, that morning I was running late for work, but I had to get my alcohol. And that's just a stupid statement anyway, just so you know that, because I didn't really pinch the time clock. They just cared that I got my work done, but it didn't really matter exactly when I showed up, as long as it was in the time frame of 8 o'clock. But in my mind, I was running late for work. So I get my bottle of booze, and I'm heading to work, and I start sipping on it on the way from Tulare to Visalia. By the time I got to Visalia, I had drinking half a pint of Jack Daniels. Walk into work, put this in the brown paper bag in the freezer, and it wasn't unusual for us to have alcohol in our office because we entertained different clients and stuff, and they would have alcohol. So nobody would have thought anything about it. So I put it in the freezer, tried to start doing my work, and, you know, all I kept thinking about was that alcohol. And finally, my best thinking was I might as well just drink the rest of it so I could get my work done. So I did, and I was in the blackout drunk at 7:30 in the morning. Not the only reason I know that is I had to fax a paper. It took me 3 days after I came to find the paper and show that I had faxed it at 7:30 in the morning. Not sure what happened during the 3 hours I was there at work, but at 10 o'clock I was leaving, crying, and ran into my boss in the parking lot. He asked me if I wanted to ride home. I'm like, no, I'm fine. It's just whatever was upsetting me at the time. And not sure how I made it to Tulare, but I did. Came to about 4 hours later, horrified. Just absolutely horrified. I'd been going to Alcoholics Anonymous once a week for 4 weeks, so my first concern was, did I hit anybody? Did I get home safe? So I ran out, looked at my car, everything was fine, and then the realization hit me. Oh, my God, I might have just lost my job. And my job was the last thing that was keeping me from being an alcoholic. So I called my boss. He didn't answer, which was totally stressing. He did answer about an hour later. And, you know, I started into my normal little thing. I don't know what happened. You know, they said and they did. And he said, I know what happened. You showed up drunk from last night. For the first time in my life, I kept my mouth shut and didn't tell him I got drunk that morning. Probably a good thing. And he said, you know, I'm really tired of all this stuff, but I really need you. It's time for you to pull your head out of your ass and figure out what it is you need. I'm going to give you one shot. Whatever it is you need that I can help you with, I will do. But I need you to come back to work. And I said, I'll be fine by morning. I promise I'll be there. And I got off the phone, and the first thought that went through my head was, I could drink for the rest of today because I don't have to go to work till tomorrow. And at that moment, I knew that alcoholism was making me insane, that I was an alcoholic, that I couldn't control my drinking, and I needed help. So I did call the lady that bought me the big book. She answered the phone. She told me she was getting her car fixed. She would call me back in 20 minutes, and she did call me back in 20 minutes. She met me that night, and we went out to dinner, and it was really depressing to me because I was telling her my really sad story of why I had to drink and what was the problem with everybody, and she wasn't impressed at all. And she told me that I needed to go to a meeting, so I went to a meeting with her. She took me to a meditation meeting of all things. Here I am still drying out from that drug, have a headache, a belly ache from trying to choke down dinner, and we're supposed to close our eyes and meditate. That was a challenge. But I made it through it. I don't remember much about that meeting, except one lady said she liked the part of the big book where people that don't normally mix come together and they stay together. And I look around this room tonight, and there's not a person that I knew in here before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But as I look around tonight, there are many friends that are very dear to me, and I'm very grateful to have them all in my life. For the ones I don't know, I hope I get to meet you. Just keep coming back because we're in this together. I'm glad you're here. And I carry that with me. So after the meeting, she was driving me back to my car, and she had a schedule that the next night, that was a Monday night, the next night we were going to go to the women's meeting. The Wednesday she was going to come to my house and we were going to start working on the steps. And on Thursday I was supposed to call Rayanne because it was Rayanne's AA birthday. And I'm like, hold on. What about Easy Does It? That seems like a lot of stuff, you know? And she wasn't impressed by that one either. So I told her, I said, okay, well, I could go to the Tuesday night meeting and you could come to my house and start doing the step thing and whatever. And I said, but I just don't really think I'm going to call Rayanne. I don't know Rayanne, and why would I call Rayanne? And she said, you know what, you're going to call Rayanne and you're going to tell her happy birthday because it's her AA birthday and you're going to do it. And she said, if she doesn't answer, you're going to leave her a message and you're going to tell her happy birthday on her message. And I'm like, well, all right then. So I called Rayanne and I was hopeful that she didn't answer the phone, and it rang like four times and I'll be damned, she answered the phone. And we had a really good talk and I wished her happy birthday, and I didn't understand at that moment that Rayanne had showed me the power of this program, that there's always someone there and you're never alone. And you pick up the phone when the phone rings. What a beautiful, beautiful gift Rayanne gave me that day. I still call Rayanne every day on her AA birthday today. I'm really, really grateful for that. So we start working in steps. I'm sure many of you know that there's a lot of rules in AA. You know, you got to go to this meeting. You got to go to that meeting. You got to work your steps. You got to this. You got to that. My sponsor was very, very regimented. She had a time that we were going to meet. We were going to meet exactly for an hour, and I was supposed to do this work, and I was supposed to know that, and I was supposed to go to this meeting and go to that meeting and hang out with this person and hang out with that person. And if I had a problem, I was supposed to call somebody in our sponsee line, and it was very, very difficult. I spent 8 months working the steps with that lady, trying very, very hard to impress her, because I just wanted to impress her to let her know how good I was doing, and she never was impressed. Well, I decided that she was going to tell me I had to go back to the Alano Club and apologize to the secretary of that meeting for my behavior. So I did. I went back to that meeting. He was there, and I waited until after the meeting, and I walked up to this gentleman, and I don't know if any of you experienced this. I call it the AA face. You could talk to somebody that's been in AA for a while, and they have no expression on their face the whole entire time you talk to them. You know, I didn't know that was a thing, but it actually saves my hiney often now because I tend to be expressive, so nobody knows what I'm thinking. So he did the AA face to me, and I'm like pouring out my heart, you know, like 2 months sober, you know, I was here in this meeting, you saved my life, I flounced out of this meeting, it was inappropriate behavior, but I went on the worst drunk, and he's standing there this whole time just looking at me stone-faced with no expression, and I get to the end, and grabs me in this hug and he laughs right in my face. And he says, honey, I don't know who you are and what you're talking about, but just keep coming back and you don't ever have to drink again. And I was like, all right then. And you know, that was a gift also. A really big gift, because he was the first person that told me I didn't have to drink again. So I told my sponsor about that, and she told me that I did need to apologize for him. So I did do one thing right. She told me I need to get in service, and I didn't exactly know what that was going to look like. She had a pretty decided idea, and I didn't really like hers. So it got to be about Thanksgiving that year, and I just knew that I needed to go to a meeting. No matter what, I needed to go to a meeting. And the only meeting that worked into the schedule for Thanksgiving that day was the Bridge Street Drunk 7 a.m. meeting. So I walked in there, I sat down, acted like I owned the place and I belonged, and I actually was home. I heard things that I hadn't heard before. I felt more welcome than I had ever felt before. And I started hearing the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went back the next day because it was like so attractive. I wanted to have that feeling again. And the most incredible thing happened that day. They said to me, they said, well, you know what? You look like you've been around for a little bit. How long have you been sober? And I'm like, oh, another week, and I'm going to have 6 months. And they're like, good. We need a secretary for the Friday morning meeting, and we think you would be great for it. And I'm like, oh, my God. They know how well I'm doing. They obviously see that I'm getting this program. I have a service commitment. They gave me a key. I showed up at 6:30 in the morning, and there was 4 other people there. Come to find out that there's a men's meeting at the same time, and all the men wanted to go to that meeting, and so they needed somebody to be the secretary over there. I took that service commitment. It was the best thing I ever did because I showed up every Friday morning at 6:30. I opened the rooms. I made coffee. And I didn't know who was going to show up. There was one gentleman that always shows up there at 7. He still shows up there at 7 today. And he was there. And we didn't know who else was going to be there. But we had a meeting. I had gotten really tired of that sponsor. I don't suggest any of you do this. It worked for me, but it wasn't the healthiest thing to do. I just stopped calling her. Got a little bit tired of her. So I just went to that service commitment, and I did it every week. And I was happy. You know, I wasn't drinking. I was doing my job better. I did actually show up regularly on time. I was starting to get a little bit of money because I wasn't spending it all the time. But I always had this heaviness, and it just really wasn't that exciting, honestly. And I kept going to that service commitment, and it was after about 6 months, it started dawning on me. The people in this room, they're coming in from the mission, most of them, everything they own in a bag. And they had something that I didn't have. They had hope. Hope for change, hope for a different life, hope for something better. And I had no hope. And I wanted hope. So I decided that the best thing for me to do was to call that sponsor and get back into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew I had some major changes coming up that I might drink through, and I probably needed to be connected with the program because that him, I finally decided it was a good idea to move to another place, and he could have his girlfriend and be happy. It was a lot easier. So I called the sponsor, and I said, you know, I recognize that I haven't done the things you asked me to do, and I know that I need to do them. I'm in a bit of a clinch with my job right now, and I was working 2 jobs at that time that were both full-time jobs. And I said, in October, that's going to change, so I want to get connected with you. I want to start meeting with you, and as soon as October hits, which was just 2 weeks away, I said, I'll go to any meeting you want me to go to. I'll be anywhere you want me to be. And she said, okay. After the first time that we went to a meeting together, the old stuff started again. You know, why aren't you at this meeting? Why aren't you at that meeting? Why aren't you doing this? And I said, you know what, this isn't going to work for me. I need a different sponsor. So I was really scared when I told her I need a different sponsor because I didn't know who that sponsor was going to be. I just didn't know. I didn't really know what to do. I felt a little lost. So I went back to the women's meeting. And after the women's meeting, this lady walked out into the parking lot, and we had that meeting after the meeting in the parking lot that we talk about. And I have to tell you about this lady because I hated this lady from the minute I met her. I met her like right when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Every time she talked, I hated her. Everything she said, I hated about her. If she looked in my direction, I hated her. But here she was, standing in the parking lot, talking to me for 2 hours, and she said the most amazing thing. She says, I think you're finally getting this program because you're actually starting to make a little sense. I'm like, oh my God, she understands me. So I asked her to come over to my house the next night. I was going to ask her to be my sponsor, and it took a little bit for me to warm up to it, and when I did, I was looking for somebody that could love me. She's a little more mature. She's been sober for, I think, 48 years now today, and And, you know, I just thought maybe she would love me. Well, I'll tell you what, that little nice, mature, lovey lady can pop her eyes out like nobody I've ever seen and make my butt pucker faster than anybody. She looked at me and she said, you know, she said, I'll be willing to meet with you and work on your issues and how you could apply the steps to them. She said, I don't really like the name sponsor, so I could be your mentor. And she said, but I'm telling you right now, you're going to have to take responsibility for your own sobriety. I'm going to stay sober no matter what. And if you die, you die. And she up and left my house. And I was like, well, maybe I won't call her again either. But I learned that I need to sit with it for a bit. So I did. And I started having a lot of sleepless nights. And at that point, when I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I couldn't go back to sleep. I picked up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and I started reading it because I wanted to read it. And I started seeing my story on every page in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I made a deal with myself when I got through the first 165 pages, I would call her again. And I got through them in about 3 or 4 days. I called her and said, okay, I'm ready. And she says, oh, you know, I was getting a little worried. I didn't know if I scared you off with that if you die, you die. And I'm like, you told me if I die, I die? And she said, yeah. And I said, oh, man, you scared me to death when you told me I had to be responsible. I didn't hear the rest of it. We started on this magnificent journey. She's taught me so much in the last 6.5 years. We've walked through a lot of things together, I went through a period after I moved back to Visalia and got out of that relationship, and I had a couple family members and a child of a friend of mine, he had the same syndrome that my son was born with, so they had grown up together. He passed away, and it was all like 6 weeks apart. Not a lot of stress going on, and I would call my sponsor and talk to her through it, and I was going to meetings and having service commitments, and she said to me, she says, you know, you've got a lot going on in your life. Have you ever thought about drinking? I said, no, I'm just trying to keep moving fast enough forward that I don't catch my ass on fire because God keeps blowing shit up every time I turn around. She's like, well, just keep moving forward. I said, okay. And I thought things had kind of slowed down a little bit at that point, and had another hymn, hadn't gotten out of that little triangle thing for a bit there, and I went out to go to work one morning, and was thinking about what I was mad about that he was doing and what he wasn't doing, and, you know, all those drama things we get in our lives, and there was a letter on my steering wheel. And it was a letter from my son. My son was born with a multimedical disability. He's had 35 surgeries in his life, a seizure disorder, hearing loss, all kinds of different things. And told me that felt that he needed to be a girl, that he wasn't a boy. And I was like, all those hymn issues went out the window, and I'm like, how am I going to fix this, you know? And I was just overwhelmed. I was very afraid that could cause a lot of issues with his health and with his hormones, could cause seizures to come back. It was just totally overwhelming, and I didn't know what to do, but all I knew was that if I went to a meeting, I would find the answer I needed to find. I kept in close contact with my sponsor, and I remember after one extremely long session with her, she told me that I was going to have to get more connected in Alcoholics Anonymous or else I was going to wear her out. And so I was really afraid of wearing her out. So I started going to even more meetings, and I was at 8 to 10 meetings a week. I had 5 service commitments, and life was happening, and it was in session. And, you know, I would get a little bit stressed about my son issue because I still didn't know how to deal with it, and I'll never forget what day I was spinning out of control, and I just knew that I was in a really bad place. And so I called my friend that from the 7 a.m. meeting, and I said, you know what, I just don't know what to do, and people are looking at me, and they want me to fix it, and I don't know how to fix it, and this is crazy. And he says, and I said, and I just don't understand. And he says, you know what, you don't want to get a pair of balls and a penis, so you never will understand. And I went, oh. He says, any more than your kid can understand that you're an alcoholic. And I went, oh, my gosh. You're absolutely right, you know? And he says, all I can tell you is just keep coming back and you'll find the answers you need to find. And I said, okay. And about that time, I hear an overhead speaker. And I'm like, where are you? He said, I'm standing in Home Depot and people are starting to look at me, so I gotta go. And I was like, all right. But that's the beauty. You know what? You make a phone call when you're in trouble and somebody will answer the phone and you're never alone. And so anyway, about a couple weeks later, I was in a meeting and somebody shared a story and it hit home and I had a spiritual awakening. And I came to understand that my job is to love my child unconditionally. I'm not in control of her future. God's in control of her future. Never my child to control. It was my child to raise to the best of my ability. And her journey is her journey. And my journey is my journey. I was so excited about the spiritual awakening. Had all these emotions. I went home at lunchtime. I called my sponsor. I said, oh, my God, I think I had a spiritual awakening. And she says, what do you mean? And I told her all about it. And we talked it through. And she said, yeah, I think that's a pretty good spiritual awakening. I said, yeah, you know, it's all great, but I don't want to do that again. She says, what do you mean you don't want to do that again? I said, that was too many emotions all at once. I can't quite handle it. I just think I'll pass. And she says, well, you know what? Why don't you think of it like an orgasm, like a spiritual orgasm? And I went, oh, maybe I'll do that again. I can tell you they're not ever quite as like monumentous as that first one, but they are very eye-opening. And you know that aha moment when you're like, oh my God, you know what? It all makes sense. And I'm sober and I have a life today. And that's the greatest gift. I came to learn with her that the steps are not just something you do and you're done. It's a design for living and you use them always. Every day I use at least 3 or 4 of them. I always use 1, 2, and 3 every single morning. I make them very simple for me. I can't, he can, and I'll let him. And I'll get out of the way and see what happens. I got very confused when I would go to meetings and people would talk about they're trying to figure out what God's will is for them. And they were spending a lot of time thinking about it. For me personally, it's a no-brainer. If I have to think about it, I'm trying to make it my will. God's will unfold. It'll always be there as long as I have the spiritual connection. I learned that I will always be an alcoholic, that I will always need to have a spiritual connection. I'm going to always need to be in service. I'm really, really grateful because as I was going to all these meetings, there was this guy that showed up. And I don't know that guy, and I think that guy has actually moved out of the area, but he kept talking about H&I. You need to come to the H&I meeting. It's going to be at the Alano Club on Saturday. You come to the H&I meeting. And I thought, you know, that sounds like something I think I want to do. And I couldn't remember when the Saturday was that he said it was going to be. And so I missed that H&I meeting. So I started talking to people, and they told me they went into the county jail. And I said, well, I think I want to go into the county jail. And so they told me to find Melanie, and she could give me an application. But, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't use last names. I didn't know who the heck Melanie was, so I was going around the meetings trying to find Melanie. I couldn't find the right Melanie. So finally, I found another person that had an application, and then they told me to fill this application out. It has all your personal information, so you could get clearance to go into county jail. And I'm like, well, what do I do with this after I'm done? They said, oh, just put it up on the board at the Alano Club, and somebody will pick it up. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. I really don't think that's what I'm going to do. So they told me about this guy named Bill Hatzman. They said, get a hold of Bill Hatzman, and you could give him your application. So I got a hold of Bill Hatzman. He met me at the Alano Club. He took my application. And I'll tell you what, I'm ever grateful to Bill Hatzman because I've never been in so much service and involved in so many things as I have been since I met Bill Hatzman. And I'm very, very grateful for Bill Hatzman for that reason. So I go and I get cleared to go into the jail, and I thought, well, you know, I probably should go to a H&I meeting before I go into the jail. So I walk into the H&I meeting and they ask me if I want to be the women's coordinator. And I'm like, maybe I should go to jail first before I become the women's coordinator. So I ended up going to to Joe for a bit with a couple of really awesome ladies, and I did become the women's coordinator. And a couple years later, when our area chair was going to step down, I became the area chair of H&I. Now, I can tell you honestly, I've never gotten a service position in Alcoholics Anonymous because everybody thought that I was the best fit for the job. It was usually because nobody else said yes. But I made it my personal desire to do the very best at every service position I took. There's always a pamphlet in AA. There's a pamphlet on how to do everything. I guarantee it. If you can't find it, I'll help you find it. There's people you can call. I came to find out that we are connected and part of NorCal H&I. We reach from Tulare County to the Oregon border. It's totally amazing. Totally amazing. Started getting involved a little bit more, going to the Fresno meeting. I'm getting involved with Madera. We're all in the same region. Going to jail, starting treatment facilities. Totally amazing, amazing experience it has been. I have a really good friend in H&I with me, and she always tells me, remember when you said you didn't think H&I was for you? I was like, yeah. Now I actually have the honor of representing our Region 90 at the NorCal level, and I also participate on the finance committee. And as I started doing this, I came to find out that while the steps were really, really great, I didn't know much about the traditions and the concepts. And I was inevitably getting my ass handed back to me every time I opened my mouth, and I deserved it every time I opened my mouth. And I decided that the best thing for me was to get a service sponsor, so I could start learning the traditions and the concepts of service. Didn't know who that service sponsor was going to be. Lo and behold, the story repeats itself. There's a lady in H&I is probably one of the most put-together people that I've ever met. I respect everything about her. I wish I could grow up and be her, but I hated her too because I didn't think I could do it. Ended up participating with her in a committee meeting not very long ago. We were talking the next day about something totally unrelated. I never had a thought process that she would be a service sponsor for me at all, because all she did was hand me my ass back every time I opened my mouth. And she was right every time she did it. And I was talking to her on the phone, having this great conversation, and out of my mouth comes, hey, by chance, would you think about being my service sponsor? And she's like, well, I'm really kind of taken aback. I'm like, well, you're not near as shocked as I am. But, you know, lo and behold, she said yes. Greatest experience of my life. She gave me work to do. I'm willing to do every bit of work that she asked me to do. We had our first meeting over the phone. She actually isn't in this area. She's out of town, but it works beautifully. Incredibly beautifully. I'm very excited to be on this journey with her. And I recognize today that I don't ever hate another person. That's my disease telling me that I can't grow and I can't be better. But I can. And there's always somebody there that'll love me, show me the way, and teach me what I need to know. At the end of our meeting the other night when I was on the phone with her, she told me at the end of the conversation, she said, I love you. And you know what? I love her too. And I can't express the gratitude that I feel for every person in this room, for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, for the ability I have to be sober today, for this beautiful design for living. The steps protect me from myself. The traditions protect AA from me. Because you all need a lot of help on that one, because I have an opinion about everything. And I'm sure I'll find out the concepts of eight. The concepts teach me how to participate and be a respectable member of society in Alcoholics Anonymous and outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm really grateful you allowed me to come here and share some time with you, and I want to leave you with this thought. I read this morning in the Grapevine quotes, and it really fit. Since today marks not only the last day of my life to this date, but also the first day of the rest of my life, and since I have come to believe that the best is yet to come, I think today has been my best day sober, and all of you have made this my best day sober. Thank you very much.